This podcast is proud to be part of the TalkSport Fan Network. TalkSport. Powered by fans.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The TalkSport Fan Network is proudly supported by McDelivery, bringing you the food you love. McDelivery brings a top-tier lineup of food right to your door. No matter the result, you'll always be winning with McDelivery. So, the only thing left to say is, you win? Order now on the McDonald's app, and you can also get rewards points delivered too, so that ordering today means some tasty rewards for tomorrow. Only via app at participating restaurants, 18 plus, rewards registration required. Points only on menu items. Delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Hello and welcome to Etzemo King Fellow, the show that follows the magnificent Chelsea FC women's team. Now, after taking a giant step towards the Champions League semi-final in the week, attention turned to the Chigwell Construction Stadium and a West Ham team who, despite languishing in 11th place, had shown the likes of Arsenal and Manchester United that a visit here was no walk in the park. And the chance for the Hammers straight from kickoff highlighted just that, but Chelsea showed why they are the current WSL champions and heading to a Champions League semi-final, going from front to back in just 8 touches, the last coming from Aggie Beaver-Jones into the bottom corner. The next hour or so that followed, however, belonged to the Hammers, missing chance after chance, and the one they did put in the net was incorrectly called offside. Chelsea's true strength is their depth, and on came Mauro Ramirez, Frank Kirby, Kat Macari and Aaron Cuthbert. Swing momentum back in Chelsea's favour, and it was a swinging corner sent in by Macario that was controlled and smashed into the net by somebody who, according to Emma Hayes, doesn't have the goal threat of a Serkan Miskin. The goal killed all West Ham hope and moved Chelsea back to the top of the WSL. And the title of tonight's show, Went to Mo King's Meadow, episode number 128, is, and I took that personally, which is a meme reference for those of you that are older than me. Now, luckily, it's not just me and memes tonight. I am joined by my regular co-host now, Mr. Dane Whittle. Dane, good to see you, mate.
Good evening. Now, how are you?
I'm okay, though. I left my slippers in the other room and my feet are a bit cold. Apart from that, I'm okay.
Don't care, you're not going anywhere, just stay there.
Yeah, and luckily, I know we're a bit late, but we have got two people that know what they're talking about. No, not me and Dane, is our guest this evening. Fresh from a trip to Amsterdam, followed by a trip to Dagenham, it's Sophie Spittle. Sophie, how you doing?
Hi, Dean, I'm good, thanks. Yeah, just recovering from Amsterdam and Dagenham. Not sure which was more strenuous.
Yeah, I know where I'd rather be. And also following in those footsteps, Mr. Rich Bates. Rich, good to see you, mate.
Yeah, good to see you as well, Dean. I'll try to recall in this episode what I saw of the game, but the sun was in my eyes for the first 70 minutes of it. So we'll see what we can do.
Yeah, I did notice that on the TV. It was quite sunny that end. Could needed a few hats on sale down there. Would have helped, I guess. Before we get started, obviously you both was in Amsterdam, both then again in Dagenham. I guess, Sophie, two different away ends?
Yeah, yes. The quality of the away end in terms of the surroundings, very different. The Amsterdam Arena, what a beautiful stadium that is. Very nice seats, very nice area behind the seats as well, because we weren't in the normal away section. And then Dagenham, wow. It's my first trip to Dagenham. And it wasn't as bad as I was expecting, to be fair. The away end was a terrace. And actually, there were so many of us in there, they actually opened out, had to open the side up as well. So we actually had half the side and the whole of the end. So, yeah, it was a decent showing on Sunday.
Yeah, they do say the best thing about Dagenham is leaving. How true is that? I'll not, I'll leave that up to you. But Richie, you know, it was good to see a great following in Amsterdam for Chelsea in Europe. And then again, on Sunday, I know it's a bit more local West Ham than Ajax, but still, the away support is gathering a bit of a regular following now, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think it's been progressively been doing better sort of throughout the season. I mean, I've done all of the Euro away trips this season, and it has gotten like we had a bigger number in Gothenburg than I perhaps thought we would have, given how close it was to Christmas. And then yeah, we had more numbers in Amsterdam. Obviously, it's a trip I think that lots of people like to go to. Yeah, it was really good, and yeah, I think this is the third time I've been to Dagenham because I did both trips last season. This one was considerably warmer than the other two, but still, it's the same type of stadium that Gillingham use, the Priestfield, where the other three sides of the other three stands have roofs on it, and the away end doesn't. So you know, it's nice of them to treat the away fans like that. Luckily, it hasn't rained yet on any of those three occasions. But you know, I look forward to when we go there next November and it's pissing now.
Yep, now you've said it, it's almost nailed on. So good to see some proper fans on the show tonight, unlike regular part timers that we have hosting the bloody show.
I appreciate a part timer.
Yeah, well, if you can call you that. Now, you can obviously listen along to the show live every Tuesday or the occasional Friday. We say 8 o'clock, but that is never true. On Mixlr, it's mixlr.com, and you can join in the show by posting it on the live chat page, and we will read some of them out as we go. We've already got Buffer and David in tonight, so good to see you both. On the show tonight, talking about that, in part one, we're going to look back at all the action from Sunday, pay tribute to Frank Kirby and Jess Carter. And then in part two, we'll have a quick look ahead to the second leg of the Champions League quarter-final, which takes place at Stamford Bridge tomorrow night against Ajax. And we're going to do all that right after this. Into the lineup then, Chelsea lining up. I'm going to say 4-4-2. I don't know how true that is. Hampton in goal, a back four of Ashley Lawrence, Jess Carter, Khadija Buchanan, and Neve Charles, Johanna-Ritz and Kamrad, Jelena Cankovic, Melanie Leupolz, Aggie Beaver Jones in midfield with Lauren James, and Zergan Luskin continuing their partnership up front. Emma Hayes making all five available subs on this game. In the 55th minute, Aaron Cooper and Kat Macario on for Cankovic and Nuskin. In the 63rd minute, Mayra Ramirez and Frank Kirby on for Beaver Jones and Lauren James. So I can read my handwriting. And in the 82nd minute, Guru Wrighton on for Kamrad as well. That left Tachira Musovic, Sophie Ingle, Iperese and Nathalie Bjorn as the unused subs. Stats, Chelsea with 60% possession, 19 shots, 7 on target, 7 corners. And 9 fouls to West Ham's 40% possession, 8 shots, none on target. I've got no corners written down. I don't know if that's right, because it's messy. 12 fouls. I'll have to check that as we go along. But Dane, we said sort of similar, win the game first, pick the strongest team, and then make the subs. And that's kind of what Emma done, wasn't it?
4-3 to us in corners.
Yeah.
No, sorry, 7-1. Sorry, off 4-3 offsides. I was looking at 7-1 in corners to Chelsea.
Yeah, probably by handwriting, which is a problem.
That is a problem. So, what was your question?
The lineup we said sort of similar to what was selected actually for a change.
Yeah, I put out there. I don't know if Macario could have maybe done 45 minutes. I thought maybe, did I say maybe Kirby might have come in? We both said Beaver Jones, didn't we? We were quite happy with that. I was a little bit weary when I did not see Sophie or Aaron in there. I think at least if you're not playing Aaron, you should have Sophie in there. which someone disagreed with on X or Twitter, said you need legs around Sophie, which I sort of get an argument, but I think Sophie scans and covers. I thought there's got a bit of a gap between the defence and midfield, and I thought Sophie plugs that gap with just her positioning, how she scans certain areas. So Melanie and Cankovic around her would have been good enough for me. But yeah, you know, it's ridiculous amount of games we're playing at the moment, but obviously being in all competitions is what we want. So, you know, we've got to take it and can't really complain about it. I just thought it should have been, you know, mentioned maybe a little bit more on commentary, which obviously Rich and Sophie wouldn't hear. So that's why I like to put my input in. You know, that's why I don't obviously go to the games. I'm more to listen to the commentary so I can give that viewpoint. And yeah, it just wasn't mentioned once, you know, just for how tired it must be. Which someone else wanted to go at me mentioning on Twitter and X as well. And it was interesting seeing a stat today that potentially we could have 12 games left to Man City's 5, which again will be, I'm sure they were correct, really interesting. So I think Emma did what was expected and what was more than enough with her team. But as I said, I thought I would have had Sophie in there if Aaron's not playing.
Yeah, we'll talk about the midfield a bit later because it didn't really work what Emma went with. But Sophie, it was good to see both Ramirez and Bjorn back in the squad, if just on the bench.
Yeah, definitely. Happy to see them both. And obviously, we'll talk about it later, I assume, but Ramirez came on and made a real difference. Apparently, though, Emma said in a press conference today that Bjorn never made it through training today. So it doesn't sound like she's going to be ready for tomorrow night or possibly even Sunday. So I don't know how ready she would have been to come on Sunday, even though she was on the bench. But yeah, no, great to have them both. I mean, and now if the injuries are starting to come good for us and touch wood, we don't get any more, we're starting to see the depth that we've actually got in the squad now. Whereas I think for the rest of March leading up to this point, we have been at the bare bones, but that's some bare bones to have.
Yeah, not the worst squad in the world, I suppose, is it? Rich, your thoughts on the lineup as it dropped, you know, ahead of the game being at the stadium? What was sort of the mood like there?
I guess I would sort of broadly agree with the thoughts made before with regards to having Sophie in there, either or one of Sophie and Erin. I think that was the only thing that I could sort of pinpoint. I kind of suspected this game would be a little bit tough, given that West Ham have actually played us pretty close in the two games we've played this season. I mean, they took us to extra time in the FA Cup. And then the league game at King's Meadow was only a 2-0 win. And even last season, when Ryan Skinner was manager at Spurs, the last two games we played against them, I think we won 3-1 and 3-2. But I think they were still, you know, there were points of the game where it was sort of very nervy. So, yeah, I kind of expected it to be a bit tough. And I would have liked to have seen, one of Erin or Ingle in the midfield, because I do think they've got better off the ball qualities than Yelena does, for sure. He's definitely a much better on-ball player. But we did need to. I don't think we quite got the balance of the midfield right. And it kind of showed with some of the chances that West Ham created, especially towards sort of the end of the half. The start of the half, they kind of kept going down Neve's side on the right, but then we kept attacking down that side. It seemed to be that was the side where all the action was anyway.
Yeah, as I said, more on that midfield as we go. And Dan, we said, you know, look at West Ham's results at home. They beat Arsenal, they drew with Man United. They're no mugs. And they showed that straight from kickoff, straight up the Chelsea end and with a great chance to go 1-0 up.
Yeah, they were very impressive. You know, I think when we weathered those first couple of minutes and scored, obviously quite soon ourselves, I think people thought that might change West Ham's tactics and they wouldn't have so much of a lower block, but they stayed exactly the same, which I think is quite smart. Your plan shouldn't go out the window after a few minutes, and they caused us problems for a hell of a lot of those first 45 minutes and in certain periods of the second half. Their game plan was the correct one. They just didn't have their obviously scoring boots on. Luckily for us, I thought defensively we was all over the place. Lawrence and Charles, maybe not so much Neve. Lawrence kept on drifting in a little bit and sort of like getting a little bit lost in her positioning. I thought Jess and Buchanan was maybe having Champions League hangovers, and I just thought the midfield was getting completely overrun. And West Ham was like really packing in a space in between the defence and the midfield. And you're right, it was good points made about Rhianne Skinner and previously at Tottenham. I thought she made it very difficult for us, like she has the other two games. And, you know, you think if they, I wouldn't even say if you could back her up with a load, you know, she's got Muir's there, who's a good player. I haven't hardly seen any of her. I think she came with an injury. There's a good nucleus there. So, you know, but then again, I thought about previously when she was at Tottenham and all that to do was, you know, sharpen up a few edges, and they haven't seemed to have kicked in. But yeah, overall, I was impressed with West Ham, but also taken into consideration that, I said in previous show, business end of the season, I don't care how we play. I don't care if they had 15 chances and we had two, you know, it's 3 points that really matter to, should really matter to all of us.
Yeah, well, from that first chance that West Ham had, Chelsea went back up the other end. 8 touches from Hampton, the first, Aggie Beaver-Jones, the last, 1-0 up. And Sophie, I think if, you know, Barcelona or Arsenal had scored that goal, I think we'd still be seeing it on Sky Sports News, because it's Chelsea. Seems to get brushed under the carpet quite quickly, but it was a fantastic move that cut through West Ham like nothing.
Yeah, it was brilliant. On the day, I didn't realise just how good it was. It's only since watching it back on the highlights I realised just how quick and how accurate the passing was. Obviously, from where we were stood at that end, and the pass from Nuskan, James and Beaver Jones was right in front of us because we were on that side. And you could tell the quality then, but the rest of it, I hadn't realised how quick and how accurate the build-up was before that. Yeah, but you're right, it was a cracking team goal. And I don't think we will get enough credit. I don't think we ever will get enough credit for it. But yeah, brilliant. If we almost had a second as well, similar sort of thing, Aggie diving through, coming through, but Macca Arnold pulled off a great save to stop us scoring. But I think when we play like that, teams can't live with us. But we're struggling to do that consistently at the moment because of injuries and because we're playing so many games.
Yeah, I mean, Rich, every aspect of the goal, you know, the pass from Hampton out that cuts out West Ham's initial press, the one through from Nuskan, was it, to Lauren James, and then the ball that Lauren James plays has to be inch perfect for Aggie to run onto it and finish it, which it is. You know, it was just, as I said, deserves more hype than it got.
Yeah, I think I've spoken a few times about the passing that Hannah can do from her own goal, where she just manages to clip the ball over the opposition's winger into our full backs, you know, running onto it, like seemingly both sides with both feet, and she could, yeah, and that just sets up the goal. It set, you know, I think Neve beats a couple of players, and then like we're sort of in, but yeah, the pass as well from Nuskan, that is eye of the needle type stuff, and then, you know, it makes it easy for Lauren and Aggie. But yeah, it's a wonderful team goal from back to front. And I guess at that point, I was thinking, well, okay, we've scored in the second minute. You know, maybe we're going to go on and have a much more comfortable afternoon than what we actually happened.
Yeah, leading on from that, you know, Dane, you know, normally when Chelsea score early, it does mean the goals are going to follow. But we just never really kicked on, and, you know, Lauren didn't really get in the game. We didn't really do, yeah, they would do one more of those moves, but didn't really see much more of it. And that next sort of hour did belong to West Ham. So what I want to know really is what sort of went wrong for Chelsea?
Yeah, well, again, you know, Sophie mentioned Aggie nearly scoring again. She got put through and it was just a heavy touch, wasn't it? And if that's the one I can remember, Goldie come out and smothered it more, and it was a, I don't know if that's the one Sophie meant or I've misremembered, an actual proper really decent chance. Maybe we expected West Ham to sort of change. You know, sometimes you do score an early goal, like I said earlier, it can muck up your whole plans. Yeah, we just never got to grips with things, did we? We were a couple of chances that failed them. They should have scored, and maybe we just sometimes you're expecting, like the fans, that something's going to happen here. You know, I was expecting West Ham to eventually score, which they didn't. And I don't know if the defence got stuck in that lull. You know, there was no spine or leadership for someone to take control and say, you know, we really need to dig in deep here. You know, we were all over the place for a good half an hour in defence of that first half. And then leading into maybe the second half, getting ahead of myself, you can see we changed and we shifted. And it was funny because the co-commentator was saying West Ham need to get back to what they were doing, but they wasn't doing what they were doing because we actually shifted and adjusted really well. But yeah, we did. Listen, you can't be honest. Going back to what you said, we rode our luck. We extremely rode our luck. You know, you know, we're not going to blow teams away all season. You need times like this. There's an interesting debate today on Sky Sports about the goal at West Ham. It should have been given correctly. It wasn't offside. And it was all about, obviously, how it could affect the title race. Just forgetting all these other incidents that have happened all through the season, which was quite disappointing. They really wanted to make a fuss about this. And also leads me on to remembering what Emma was saying about in midweek about after beating Arsenal and how she was like dumbfounded. There were so many people not expecting us to win. And she thinks for a team that is like, you know, dominated winning titles for the last 4 or 5 years, we do not get the respect we deserve. But again, I'm sort of going off on a side road because it's frustrating me at the moment.
Yeah, no, Sky Sports, forgetting that Man City's first goal against Man United was offside as well in the build-up. But they don't want to talk about that, so that doesn't sell or get views, as they say, or interactions. They're talking of offside goals. So I know this would have been the other end to where you was, I believe. But I don't know if you've seen it back, a really, really bad call from the officials. And, you know, we say when they go our way, you know, we do call them out. And when they go against us, we call them out as well. But this was one in our favour.
Yeah. Obviously, we couldn't tell if it was offside. It was only at half time when people started watching it on their phones and catching up that we realised that it was offside. It was very well taken. I think Aweki and Asseyi caused our defenders problems all game. I would say that they probably gave Jess Carter and Kadisha Buchanan a tougher game than the previous two sets of, maybe even three sets of centre-forwards had in one game. And as Rich said, that's been the case when they played us at Stamford Bridge in the FA Cup as well. They don't stop. They're always hassling, always ready to pounce on any mistakes. And Aweki... No, it wasn't Weki, was it? It was what's the other one's name? I can't remember.
Hayashi,
that's it. Thank you, Rich. It was Hayashi that scored it. But yeah, it was a well-taken goal and they were unlucky. But I've not seen it anywhere on telly. So whether the TV didn't catch it or whether it just wasn't a genuine penalty, there was a point where Aggie sort of fell over in the box and then got pulled, almost rugby tackled down in front of us.
Yeah, should have been a penalty.
Nobody's mentioned that as being a possible penalty.
It's no, said she went down too easy. But she didn't. I mean, it should have been a penalty. It should have been a penalty.
No, that's not been mentioned anywhere. Pullback. So she was right in front of us and it looked like she was being rugby tackled. Mm. So if you take that into account and the offside goal, if we'd given a penalty, scored the penalty, suddenly we'd be back in front again, and then Aaron scores again. So it's a little bit frustrating. Everyone's sort of laughing about Stina Baxtinius's offside and handball and stuff, but that's a worse decision than the offside decision in our game. But that doesn't seem to be getting the opprobrium that this decision's getting, which just is a little bit frustrating. And I also think I'm going to go off on one now. I also think Leanne Skinner's comments about VAR are a bit off. I mean, how on earth do you get VAR in the Dagenham Stadium? I mean, it's just completely impractical. And she's calling for VAR. Well, how is VAR going to be implemented at Dagenham? West Ham are the only team not to have played at the London Stadium. They're not going to play their games at the London Stadium. So the only team not to have played in the main club stadium, i.e. the London Stadium. How are they going to magic up a stadium that VAR's going to be available for? It's everyone's calling us VAR as the answer, and I don't think it is. I don't like VAR. I like the fact that I can go to a women's game and celebrate goals or not celebrate goals, and it's the offside flag that determines it, not some people in the TV studio. So, yeah, I just think that there's other decisions this weekend that were as bad as that but don't seem to have got the negative publicity that decision has.
Yeah. Now, the listeners won't see this, but I do write notes for the show and I write it all down. And at the bottom,
just a blank there, piece of paper.
If you can, you won't be able to read it, but it says about VAR for West Ham. If they want it, they need to invest in their club and their team. Use of the stadium, Rich, which was going to be my next question to you, that Sophie's eloquently said there, you know, you can't call for it if your club don't back it up.
Yeah, that is definitely true. And also, just to sort of go on that fact, I do wonder if maybe the linesman kind of guess, and I do wonder from the angle, the side she was running down the pitch, whether the sun might have been in her eyes. I'm not sure that's the case. I don't think I see her actually sort of using her hand to kind of see across, but it, maybe that's a possibility. But also, these officials, or the officials, need to be invested in first, I would probably say, because, you know, I don't think any of them are professional, are they? So you need to get that. You need to invest in the referees first, and people to want to be referees in order to get the standard up. And then you can sort of talk about VAR afterwards. I'm generally in favour of VAR when it comes to offsides, because I guess apart from the decisions where you've got to work out if someone's interfering with play or not, it is a straight yes-no answer. Some of the other aspects of it are obviously I'm less in favour of. But yeah, that was obviously onside. And I mean, it was a crazy sort of... that. All of this sort of happened in the first 15 minutes where West Ham nearly score... well, have a decent chance in 20 seconds. We score from that goal kick. Kirsty Smith missed a sitter after 6 minutes. I mean, watched it back earlier. I cannot believe she's missed that. The goal's open, basically, and she's put it wide. And, you know, it could have been 1-1 at that point. And then Aggie has the one-on-one later on, the second touch kind of she just kicks it too far ahead and it gets smothered by Arnold. And then a minute later, that's when the disallowed goal happens. So a lot happens in the first 15 minutes of the game.
Yeah, when I read the none on target, I had to double check BBC had it right. I couldn't believe that Hampton didn't actually make a save all game, and it was true. Then I just want to double back to our midfield now, because it was Chanjevic playing with loopholes in that pivot, Nuskin a bit further forward. And it sort of felt like a bit we were stuck in between what had worked in the last two games against Arsenal and Ajax, and then changing it up and keeping some players fresh, and it sort of didn't work, so it wasn't perfect.
No, I might have had... I know it's mucking poor old Nuskin around to an extent, but I might have had her a little bit more deeper and had her swapped with Chankovic. There's a lot to ask of her, really. You know, she hasn't seen a lot of minutes recently, and then she comes in and struggles a bit next to Melanie. I thought I had a decent game, bit out of position herself. She hasn't played a lot of minutes recently herself, and has performed a really high standard. Yeah, I just thought it looked a little bit lopsided. Sometimes Lauren coming deep and putting another body in midfield does help, and sort of leaves a bit of a gap up front. But we wasn't playing any stupid balls to empty spaces, so that wasn't the case. And you wonder if we were just trying to like almost pack the midfield and get into another position we did with by scoring the first goal, with some good movement and good passing. But it didn't work. We got away with... well, it didn't work. We got away with it. We got 3 points, and it's a lesson learnt. But just that it might not always go right. But when you've got such a good, experienced team with quality individuals, you can still win games. And as Sophie said earlier, with players coming back to fitness, it might not be... hopefully it won't be another... we won't be in a position like this again this season, where we are sort of like at the bare bones and struggling to put, like square pegs in round holes to an extent.
Yeah, I mean, so should we sort of expect performances like this in this sort of run? As you said, we've had injuries. As Dane said, there's so many fixtures. I mean, this is the sixth win of 8 games in March. It's our busiest period of the season. We shouldn't really expect Chelsea to be at their very best every 90 minutes, every 3 days.
No, and I said on Sunday that the team looked tired. especially Nuskan and LJ. They looked like they were running on empty for the minutes they were on the pitch. I think LJ, there was a couple of opportunities for her to make runs forward and she didn't make them. And I just think she just didn't have the oomph. She was being accused of not being interested, but I don't think it was that. I think she was just absolutely shattered and she had nothing left. And Nuskan isn't used to playing that intensity of games so often in that position. And I think with LJ not necessarily making those runs, it put her off. But the midfield for me, I felt West Ham in that first half were attacking sort of down the right-hand side. And I think part of the reason was that side of the midfield wasn't backing up the fullback enough. So therefore, that's where the space was for them to attack. Whereas I think when Erin came on, again, jumping forward into the second half, but when Erin came on, she made that difference. So, yeah, the midfield didn't work, whether it's because they were tired or because they weren't in the right positioning, as Dane said, or West Ham were just working. I did think that when Gorry got injured, that made a difference to West Ham's midfield. And I think we gained a little bit of more control when Gorry went off. But yeah, we can't, going back to your original question, Dean, sorry, I went off on one again then. No, we can't expect them. They're humans. They're not robots. They feel things. They have tiredness issues just like the rest of us do. And they've done a lot of travelling. And they're going to do even more travelling, especially those that are being called up in the international break. So I'm not sure that we'll see much better in April. But this is when the Chelsea mentality sits in, isn't it? And the mental side of it really comes into being. We grind out those results. But yeah, I don't think we'll see free-flowing football for most of the rest of the season, to be honest with you. But as Dane said, I'll take a gritty 2-0 win if it means that we win two, three, four, five trophies this season. Sorry, 1, 2, 3, 4 trophies this season.
Yeah, playing well means nothing if you lose. And I feel like you have read these notes, Sophie, because my next point was on the sub saving the day. And Rich, that 55th minute, Niskan and Kankovic off for Cuppet and Macario. And that midfield partnership we've seen this season of Cuppet and Leupolz, they've really, really, really got a connection together. They know which one's going to go, which one's going to sit. They know which space one's occupying and what space the other is. And I think it showed its class. And aside of Gorry going off, as Sophie mentioned, it showed its class and it grappled the game back for Chelsea.
Yeah, absolutely did. I mean, it was pretty much as soon as Erin came on the pitch, we gained control of the midfield. It was completely transformative when that happened. And yeah, she kind of ran the show from the rest of the game. She was absolutely fantastic. And yeah, you're right. They've got an understanding that's been built up over, you know, many. Well, I guess a couple of seasons since Erin moved into central midfield, but you know they've obviously got an understanding of each other as players, being there for so long. And also Macario came on, and you know she was creating chances as well. You know, subbed on in the 55th minute, so she's had, you know, I think there was 5 minutes of injury time, so she had 40 minutes of game time. So again, you were seeing that get increased. I wonder if tomorrow, you know, if say, you know, it's we're winning 1-0 or it's still at 0-0 at half time, that she might get a whole half potentially in the second half. We'll have to sort of wait and see. But yeah, the Erin substitution was the thing, I think, that it, not from a result perspective, but from a performance level, it did change the game for us.
Yeah, it did really feel like West Ham's impetus was sort of stopped with that change. And then I come to you on Macario, she's an American. Good to see more of her, as Rich mentioned, you know, almost a full 40 minutes. And being used out wide, I thought was interesting as well.
Yeah, started off centrally, but had 5 to 8 minutes or something, and then she drifted out wide once Ramirez came on. You know, I made a... I'm guilty of years of watching her, and she's always been a player of his movement, very intelligent, skillful. I would add quickly, though, I think we did struggle on this pitch. A lot of us, you know, some heavy touches and heavy passing. And the balance wasn't always there. And yeah, just, you know, for me, it's a joy to watch. You know, I did make a statement a few weeks back when she first came on, but I don't, you know, it's easy to get blown away by like a reputation, unless obviously USWNT like international run Champions League, but I still don't realize I don't think people realise the talent we've actually got here. You know, she can be elite, world class. I think she was at a level before her, her terrible injury. So I'd take as much time with her as I possibly could. I thought Fran did well when she came on as well. You know, both her and Macario's movement was intelligent. And then when Ramirez come on and just went through the middle, adding to what you both said about Aaron, I thought Ramirez just gave a whole different dimension to our attacking ideas, and West Ham just couldn't handle her. And makes you think, again, ifs and buts, if West Ham score, if you know, you don't know what would happen. We could have stepped up if West Ham had scored and made it 1-1. That's irrelevant. But you do wonder if we would have started with Ramirez. I know it wasn't possible because you've got to be careful with her. If it would have been a complete different game, you know, we would have used her as more of the target. And she, you know, she likes that. Also, she's very direct. She can go wide herself. She had drifted out to the left a few times and had a couple of good runs and tried to centre some crosses low and high. And I just don't think the defenders yet really know how to handle her. They don't really tend to do their homework on her, and she just seems like, well, the only way we'll stop her is to foul her. And where you've had a player who's, you know, who's been out for a few weeks recently, you tend to wince at the moment when anyone for me goes near Ramirez or Katerina. And especially on a pitch like that with West Ham, and they had to play a certain way. It was not harsh on them. Their defence played a certain way, but as I said, attacking wise, they did look very, very, very threatening. But as I said, I thought they were great substitutes. Substitutes don't always come off, but I thought hard to put Guru in that because she came on so late. But the four substitutes, I thought, really, really performed as well, and what we needed to take us on through to that final third of the game.
Yeah, so as Dane says there, you know, Cuthbert sort of got us the game back, and then the introduction of Kirby and Ramirez shifted the momentum firmly in our favour. And as Dane says, I think defenders know how to deal with Ramirez, but it's when they see her up close and personal, they realise that they can't. And I think that's going to be one of her, you know, key things as she plays teams that she hasn't faced before. They're going to be shocked by how fast, how powerful she is. And a bit like Bunny Shaw for Man City, you know, no matter what you do, you're just not going to stop her unless you start putting three defenders on her, which then will open up the rest of the pitch for everybody else. But, you know, Ramirez in particular looked like she hadn't been away.
Yeah, definitely. And having had two really good results with Nuskan and James performing well at sort of like up front against Arsenal and Ajax, you kind of forget what Ramirez offers, or I can't remember, the West Ham announcer called her something really weird, like Ramirez or something. Anyway, it was very amusing. When she came on, it you just remembered, oh my God, what a player this what a player this she is. She was incredible. And I think it helped that the referee was actually giving the fouls against her, unlike some of the other refs that we've had ref us in those games this season where she hasn't got the fouls. They've just played on or not been given as often as they should have done, whereas this ref was actually giving the fouls and we were getting free kicks from them. So if that's going to happen, we've got to learn how to make the most of those free kicks. But yeah, she really bulldozed through some players. And there seems to be the start of a budding relationship between her and Kat Macario. There were a few passes that Kat made onto Tamara's movement and round the side and sort of through the defenders, which if those two can get a partnership going, well, that just bodes well, especially if you stick Lauren James in there as well. What a front three that could be for us towards the end of the season.
Yeah, absolutely. And Rich, moving on to Fran, who come on as well. You know, 200 appearances for Chelsea, the leading goal scorer for the club. But just unfortunately, in this match, the ball didn't want to fall for her to celebrate the occasion with a goal. I can't recall the amount of time she was in a position in the box just to tap the ball home, and it just wouldn't fall to her feet. But, you know, thoughts on the 200 for her and her performance coming off the bench?
Well, what can you say? If there's a Mount Rushmore of Chelsea women's players, she's definitely on it. I'd have to say that, obviously, I only started sort of watching Chelsea TV, Chelsea women on TV. I would guess sort of around the 2018 FA Cup final. And I'm pretty sure she scored in that game. It was the 3-1 against Arsenal, I believe.
Yeah, she did. But I think Buchanan, got two.
Ramona Bachmann.
Yeah, sorry.
I've since gone back and watched some clips of her when she first started, and there's goals, like there's a goal, I think sort of early in her career against Sunderland, where she beats, like, or it looks like she beats three or four people and then sticks in the top corner. You know, that's where obviously it started from, and, you know, then sort of later on developing that relationship with Sam Kerr, and in 2021 season, them two being basically unplayable with each other. She's a Chelsea legend. There's really not much more I can sort of say about that. I think we should possibly open up the floor for Sophie and Dane for this question as well, to add their thoughts.
Yeah, Dane, I mean, we've spoken about Fran quite a bit recently, and I'm not one to promote other podcasts, but she is the guest on the Chelsea Women's podcast this week, talking about her career at Chelsea. And, you know, while not being disrespectful, you know, we have spoken about her maybe losing that bit of pace, and maybe she's coming towards the end of her career. But I think she still has something to offer in a squad basis, and that showed against West Ham. You know, she was nipping about inside good areas, and maybe if that was Sam Kerr, who she's got that more connection with than Ramirez, because they haven't played together much, come away with a couple of goals in this game.
Yeah, I thought it's the liveliest she looked. I can't remember the game she started a few games back, and I thought she looked a bit lost, and she did actually play as like the centre striker, of centre forward, which she hadn't played for a while. It is hard when you've got such legendary status. You know, she took us on to new levels. She was one of the probably the best players in the world. She was performing for England as well. And it was almost like if a ball was put through, you expected her to score. She did have a real good turn of pace. Once she got away, she was away. Like, obviously, you know, time doesn't stop for us, unfortunately. And players do get older, lose a yard of pace here and there, and you have to be smart and sort of like adjust your game. I think she's a very intelligent footballer, so she, given a chance, she could easily adjust her game. You know, maybe come a little bit deeper, get involved more, instead of trying to be that old sort of striker using your pace. We did do a big show on her, didn't we, years ago when we gave away a shirt celebrating a lot of her career at Chelsea. And you know, sometimes you do keep players on too long because it's a sentimental reason. I did say a few weeks back I'd be prone to still give her another year. I think, especially with a new manager coming in, you'd need that experience round, that winner's mentality. You know, you can't buy that captain material within her own right, just through what she's done and been through in the game, on and off. Mentality wise as well, absolutely outstanding. I just it will be sad day when she does decide. I don't know what, you know, what plans she's got, you know, relationship wise if she does want to move on, maybe taste the, you know, a player of her ability could do a job abroad, or be in the German league and French league, you know, at a certain level. You don't know what the plans are, but you know, she. We've got so much respect and love for her that it will be a sad day when it does come and she leaves. But as I said, I'd be tend to give her another year, just because, you know, we've got two outstanding strikers who are coming back from long injuries. So, you know, we won't be seeing them anytime soon. You know, might not see the best of Ramirez till next year. Katerina is obviously just coming back from a big injury. So, and you still need to give Lauren a certain guidance, so it wouldn't be such a bad thing keeping Fran around for another year.
Yeah, she just had her house done up as well, so I don't think she's going to move anywhere.
Well, I've had it done up to sell, but still.
No, you don't do it up and then sell it. You want to live in it. You want to experience the luxury that she's been installed. And Sophie, you know, it would be right to see Fran in other colours. I think, you know, I know she did start at Reading, but she's Chelsea through and through, and I said before, she decides when she wants to.
Yeah, it's a good point. Yeah.
She wants to play. She can play for all I'm concerned.
Yeah, definitely. She should decide. It's it's scary to think just how many goals and how many appearances she would have made if she hadn't have had so many injuries. It would probably be what, 300 appearances, 150 goals, 200 goals, something like that, which is absolutely scary numbers. Just the potential, well, not the potential, the actuality of her is absolutely incredible. And I know you said that it's not, you don't like bigging up other podcasts, but she was on Three Players in a Podcast earlier in this week, and that was a really good interview. So don't listen to it instead of listening to this podcast, but it's definitely worth going and listening to that podcast after you've listened to this podcast, because it's really insightful, some of the way she talks about confidence and when you're in the flow of game in, game out, game in, game out, and how the game seems different when you're playing that, and how she's had to adapt this season to playing more of a bit part role in the squad, and how that impacts how she plays when she comes on. But she's so intelligent, so capable. I think I said last time I was on, definitely keep around player in the 10 or out wide. I think she struggles to play up front now, but player in that 10 position or out wide. And yeah, she's still such a good player.
Yep, still plenty to offer. Rich, it wasn't just Fran who made a milestone appearance as well. It was also Jess Carter, 150 appearances for her. Crazy to think, just a couple of years ago, to talk about Jess and, look at her now, almost unnoticed in this team, which I think is a compliment to her performances. She's just there 7-8 out of 10 every week, does her job. She built partnerships this season with Bright, Buchanan and Bjorn. And, they say availability is the best ability, and she's shown that for Chelsea, 150 appearances in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, and across multiple positions as well. She's a very dependable player. As I said, the availability is possibly the best of ability you can have in football. And, I can seldom remember her, not being in a match day squad. As you said, she's developed those relationships with Natalie Bjorn, Kenesha Buchanan more recently. That's worked really well, sort of, especially in the games against Arsenal and Ajax. And then obviously sort of the more longer term one with Millie, who, it was also very effective for England at the World Cup as well, because they obviously had that understanding from a club level and, they played pretty well in that tournament together. She's been a fantastic signing. I think it took her a little bit of time to sort of get used to the standards. I think she'd sort of potentially say that herself. I think she did say that in the Zone documentary, that and she was sort of very honest in some segments of that documentary where, she wanted to play for England, but she knew she wasn't at that stage yet. She's obviously got there because, of her hard work and also, the guidance that Emma and the rest of the coaching staff have given her. Again, another fantastic player.
Yeah, Dane, anything on Jess? She's one of those players that perhaps we've talked about more than others, but, more recently, as I said, she's just gone about her business and, Azpilicueta-like, I guess, does that job.
Mm.
Don't know it's on the pitch, but if we took her out of this team, I think you would notice that hole.
Yeah, I was always quite a big supporter of Jess. I could see the potential there. My also at 26, what a great age, especially for a defender who's played those many important minutes and appearances for Chelsea and recently for England. 26 is a great age to be coming on to. Played all across the back four. Like Rich said, I'm sure she might have had a couple of stints in defensive midfield at some point as well. Or I can remember her having some really good games against but Man City, when she was sort of like, almost, are we going to see her at a wing back or as a full back? But she's sort of like found herself in centre back due to injuries, or just due to that was the whole end plan that Emma was going for. And I think she's been outstanding. She goes about her business quiet. She doesn't come across as, attitude. Not that makes a difference. A lot of my players have attitude, but just like for an example, when I was noticing how she was talking to the referee on Sunday, it was so respectful. Hands behind her back, a little bit of a wink, a little bit of a smile, and I thought she got hard done by on that decision. It's so easy just to get caught up in winning
and performances and expectations. But, you know, these players have got to come onto the field every game and perform, and that is what they're doing. And she's, you know, she's a top part of this team, a leader as well, someone we need to keep, you know, tied down to a good contract. And, you know, she deserves it, and she deserves all the praise she gets. Like, just like we try, as I said last week, we try to mention as much as possible, but there's so many brilliant players here. Sometimes you do forget, but, you know, we have mentioned Jess before as being a very good player, and I believe she's got better. And at the age of 26, there's levels, even higher levels, she can reach.
Yeah, I mean, Sophie, I mentioned sort of that leadership aspect on Twitter, or X, as you want to call it. You know, Emma's been handing the armband to Erin and Niamh, you know, on rotation, and I was a bit surprised that Jess wasn't included in that. But, you know, then again, she already shows those leadership qualities that perhaps Emma's trying to eke out of Niamh and Erin. She's a leader on the pitch. She talks a lot in the defence. Even when it was her, Millie and Magda, she was, you know, she was the talker of those three. She led the team through that. And, you know, that development she's been through over the past sort of 2-3 years has been phenomenal. And she's, for me, one of the best, you know, defenders in Europe.
Yeah, definitely. I think I've said before that she's sort of seems to have come out of a shell a little bit this season, and is directing the back line more and more, being a little bit more forceful. It always makes me laugh that whenever we score a goal, some player has to go and talk to Emma to get the instructions. And this season, a lot of the time it's been Jess. So there's obviously something there that Emma sees that she can count on her to get the right instructions across and get the point of view across that she needs to get across. So yeah, definitely. She's definitely matured into one of the best defenders in the country, and can play anywhere along the back line, and has done it for England as well. So there's nobody happier than me to see her play so well in the World Cup for England in the summer. Yeah, brilliant.
Yeah, it was the funny part of the Fran podcast where she said that G was the one that used to ask for the days off in the huddle after the match when they won. Jess could become that player for ask for 2 days off after a win. Although at the moment, you can't have 2 days off because you've got a match coming the day after that. Back to the football, Rich. You know, Chelsea on top, and they do make... Oh, sorry, Sophie wants to come back in.
Guru made her 150th appearance against Ajax as well.
Yeah. Well done, Guru. That's all we're going to get. Sorry. maybe in a couple of weeks we can give you some praise. But we are 52 minutes into this and we've still got more to talk about. And the Ajax review was... however long ago, anyway. But we love Guru, though she's not listening.
Celebrate 152nd in the next episode.
Yeah, she doesn't like Ajax, so, you know.
Assuming she plays tomorrow.
Apparently, yeah. Jess was against Ajax as well, according to this.
I had it for this one. But then again, Chelsea and stats don't always add up.
True.
Yeah. So I'll go with what I've got. Yeah, Rich, Chelsea back on top, and they do make it count in the 88th minute. Macario's corner. A corner that beat the first player. Loved it. Aaron Cuthbert chesting it down. And after hearing Emma Hayes say that Sjoerkan Muskan has a more goal threat than her, she smashed it into the back of the net. You know, proper cup goal, wasn't it? I loved it.
I think she took some of the comment out on the ball. She's absolutely levered that in. And yeah, it was a great finish from where we saw how fast that ball was travelling, and like Mackenzie Arnold's just like, what am I supposed to do about that? Well, there's nothing I can do about that. It's just gone past me in a flash. Yeah, I mean, I'm sort of skipping ahead and saying that Erin would have been my man of the match even if she hadn't scored that goal. That goal has definitely, you know, it sort of emphasised that even further. But yeah, again, another assist from Macario. I knew she could take set pieces. I knew she did that for Leon. And yeah, a delivery to the back post. And I mean, I guess West Ham's mark, it wasn't great to let Erin chest the ball down in the penalty area. But still, you know, thank you very much. The finish was absolutely brilliant. And, you know, I enjoyed it very much.
Yeah, my son came over to the laptop. And it was just about technical. And he said, you've got any players that can do a power shot? So he watches FIFA and stuff. I said, yeah, there's a couple. And then Erin does that.
I'll have a check to see if that's actually one of the styles she's got on the game. But
you know, traits.
Yeah.
We'll be after this.
She should now, yeah.
But Dan, I think that was, you know, people have talked about West Ham being unlucky, but I think we actually deserved the second goal given what we created when them subs came on.
Yeah, as I said, four subs really did change the game, gave us a different dimension, you know, a different reference to our attack to an extent. And I thought Aaron was pivotal in that just by coming on and like really, you know, moulding that spine back together. She has got a power shot on her. She's also, we would love that, bit between her teeth she has. There's a nice ball in Makara. She nearly took off, I think it's Kadisha's. I'm sure it's Kadisha's head she nearly took off with the shot. If you look in slow motion, almost took a whiskers of her nose off. But yeah, it was something we needed, you know, especially it being so tight at the top. To get out of that game with 3 points was enough. So to get a bonus of another goal with it being who is top at the moment on goal difference was a massive bonus for us. I was greedy and thinking, come on, we've got, you know, we've got, could have potentially another 8 to 10 minutes here to get another one. But yeah, you take what you can get. And it was a sweet, sweet strike. And, you know, I think, you know, I, like Rich said, you know, just for her, what did we work out? It was 40 minutes display. I think that potentially 40. Was man of the player of the match, man of the match. Player of the match for me. Just you can have an impact in that space of time. And I believe she had a massive impact.
Yeah, player of the match shortly. Before that, so if I'll come to you on this, because I think this will tee you up for something you said earlier, you know, West Ham being sort of marked as this unlucky team that probably should have come away with something from this game. But zero shots on target. The penalty appeal for Chelsea, which you mentioned earlier, Aguibu Jones being pulled down. They should have had a second yellow for Bergam Lundin. She did a challenge on the edge of the box that Leupold's got booked for about 5 minutes later for the same challenge.
Yeah, yes, remember that really clearly, yeah.
Yeah, so for this unlucky tag for West Ham probably isn't as accurate as the journalists make you want to believe.
No, definitely not. But it's the same old story, isn't it? Chelsea get away with murder, too big a squad, too much depth. It's not fair. So they've got to find more than one stick to beat us with, haven't they? And this is what it is at the moment. So it is what it is.
Fake news, Donald Trump would say.
Fake news.
Yeah, although we'll leave the politics out of it. So moving on to player of the match then. I went with Ramirez. She got 11% of the vote. Carter with 16%. Cuthbert 34%. And the winner with 39% was Aggie Beaver-Jones. Rich, your thoughts? I thought that was... I wasn't expecting Beaver-Jones to win it. I thought it would have gone to Cuthbert.
What I would say is that of the forward players in the first half, Aggie was our biggest threat. So I do sort of understand that. And especially, you know, she did score the goal. But no, I've already said I'm giving it to Erin. The performance flipped once Erin came on the field. And yeah, I've already said, I'm going to repeat myself, even if she hadn't scored the second goal, I would have still given it to her because the performance completely flipped once, you know, and, you know, at the attitude, it just, everything sort of changed for the better once she came on. So it was as conclusive a winner. And I even said it to Sophie, who was standing next to me in the stand, that was the case. It was pretty easy for me and pretty conclusive.
Yeah, I'm going to come to Sophie last because she always names someone that I haven't picked. But Dan, I think you mentioned Cuthbert already as well. But it's always a little bit of a popularity vote as well for the player of the match, and Beaver-Jones is well loved as an academy player coming through, and she scored a great goal as well.
Yeah, no, she did. And that's, you know, I've said plenty of times, I think she potentially has sort of like similarities to Fran. You know, she can play anywhere across that front three, essentially left, right. Took her goal outstandingly. I didn't think she looked dangerous without having a great game, if that makes sense. You know, she does wear a heart on her sleeve. You know, not that it makes much difference, you know, whether you show you care or not, but you could just see a couple of times if her touch let her down, or a pass that she thought she could have pulled off. She, you know, her head's, you know, her hands will be on top of her head and she'll be like wincing to an extent. I just love her attitude. It does help, doesn't it, when you know they're Chelsea supporters. There's just something about that that does really connect with us fans. We love them all, but you know, when you see the old pictures of them as youngsters with Chelsea kits on, there's just something so special about that. So you can get swept away with that, and I'm you know, a failed ex forward anyway, so I tend to be biased to a forward. You know, I'd be the one who'd stand on the halfway line with my hands on my hips for 89 minutes and then not doing anything, score a goal, and I want to take all the glory. So I am from the forwards union, but like Rich said, as soon as Aaron come on, it completely changed us for the better, and we were a completely different team, and we really dominated from that moment on, and I think it was largely down to her.
A bit like the show, isn't it? None of the work and all the glory. There you go. Although there is no glory. Sophie, how did I do?
Yeah, no, I agree. I think Erin would have been player of the match. But honourable mentions to Melanie Leupolz. I know in the first half the midfield wasn't the best, but I think she did try to play her game and tried to keep it ticking over. Yeah. And I think she looked a much better player when Erin came along on. And as we said, the partnership between the two of them, they just know how each other plays, and Melanie's game improved. But what I like about Melanie and what's really developed is that she is a armbandless captain at the moment. So there's a lot of times where she's the one that's organising them and keeping them going. And when they're in a huddle, she's the one that's making the comments and making the points and that. And I think she's one of those players at the moment, which is a bit of an unsung hero. She's playing consistently well, doing really well as they lead an armbandless captain, but going under the radar slightly. So whilst I agree, for me, Erin was player of the match, I think honourable mention needs to go to Melanie as well.
She's at top levels, isn't she, for a few weeks now, a few months now, and played a hell of a lot of minutes as well.
Yeah, I just think her international and her experience is really coming through this season.
Yeah. That's good, Gus. A really good point. Captainless, yeah. Armbandless captain. That's a really good sentence. So.
Clip that one out. I was unsure on the fourth choice, and I give it to Jess because I put Khadija in the last two matches and I thought they both played very well. And so I thought it was about time she got some a mention as well. And she come third, so I wasn't entirely wrong. We're going to take a short break now. When we come back, we're going to whiz through an Ajax review because we are going to play them tomorrow. And by the time this gets published, it will be mainly pointless. But we'll do it anyway, and we'll be right back. After this.
Chidge.
JK. In all the years you've been following Chelsea, you hardly ever miss a match, home or away. But how would you feel if you couldn't be there and it's not on TV?
Oh, Chidge, I'd be bereft. Inconsolable. The thought of missing my beloved Blue Boys live. It's all too much.
I know, JK, I know. It's all a bit too much, isn't it?
Yes.
Well, panic not. NordVPN have come to the rescue.
They have?
Yep. NordVPN allows us to watch any match, even if it's not on live TV here.
They do?
Yeah, they do. With just one click, they switch your virtual location to a country which is showing the match, and they act as your cyber bodyguard whilst online, protecting your personal data and sensitive info like card details and passwords.
Oh, wow. Great. But yeah, I bet that'll cost me a fortune.
Actually, JK, it's only the price of a cup of coffee per month, and you can use your account across 6 devices. It's a bargain, JK, and best of all, no more tears for you.
Oh, thank you. Thank you, NordVPN. I'm so happy. I could cry. Where do I sign up, Jidge?
Well, to get the best discount off your NordVPN plan, go to nordvpn.com/ChelseaFancast. There's no risk with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee, and you'll help support the Chelsea Fancast. The link is in the podcast episode description box. Away days are great, but there's nothing quite like playing at home. The same goes for McDonald's. Maximise your home ground advantage with McDelivery. You in? Order now on the McDonald's app. At participating restaurants, 18+, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Welcome back to Wetmore Kings Meadow. Time now for a quick look ahead to the second leg of our UEFA Champions League semi-final quarter-final against Ajax, the second leg. Dane, 3-0 up in front of the first leg. Can't go wrong, can it?
No. I don't expect it to. I expect us to control the game or try and at least control the game. We've not put in maybe too much into it, if that makes any sense, you know, like dictating it. You know, sort of like Mourinho-esque, you know, if we need to, step it up. If we don't need to, you know, just like almost sort of like dampen Ajax out. I already know my score in my head, so I'm just going to shout it out before you even... No, I won't. I don't want to spoil your fun. But yeah, I expect us to, yeah, you know, not take them lightly, but also, you know... You've got to have one eye on, for me, I know it does, people don't like it, and to take one game at a time and just get this over and done with and then worry about the next one. I just think we will try and dictate the game and you know, dictate them as well.
Yeah, Sophie, Emma said in a press conference today that she's not focused on Sunday. Is she a liar?
I think there's a degree of fabrication in that. I think there'll be an element of player resting or player minutes. What's what I'm looking for? Minutes. Anyway, management, minute management on Wednesday with an eye to Sunday. But I think they have to focus on one game at a time, because if they play this game thinking about Sunday, then you never know what can happen. We're 3-0 up. We can't be complacent. I think Ajax's inexperience showed at the Amsterdam Arena. However, they're getting Sheridan Spitzer back for this game, so therefore that experience level goes through the roof. They lose Lily Johannes, who's very inexperienced and very young. So again, that sort of evens that out. So they get an early goal and we're not on it. You never know what's going to happen. But I think the strength in depth we have, even if she doesn't start the likes of Ramirez and Macario, to have them on the bench to come in, I'm not sure the young Ajax team will know how to handle a player like Ramirez. So hopefully she'll be fit enough to play some sort of role in the game, building up to the Arsenal game next weekend.
So the short answer is yes, she's a liar.
To a degree.
Yeah, I won't be political about it. Yeah, Rich, you also said that teams with 3-0 down can have a freedom that could be hard to play against. But that might suit us, you know, even better if they can have that freedom and we can just pick them off when we want to.
Yeah, I think Ajax would have come with that freedom even if they were 3-0 up going into this, just because, you know, historically and culturally, the way the clubs run, they're gonna want to play on the ball. I mean, they did try to play last Tuesday, and they do have some talented players. Lily Hannes has been called up to the US Women's National Team squad for the She Believes Cup today, I believe. So you've got, that's the sort of talent you're sort of dealing with there. And Romy Leuchter, she did it at the post when the game was 0-0, and I sort of mentioned her in the preview towards that game. And they do get Spitzer back. It does give them that experience, especially sort of in the midfield area. Having said what Emma said, I think they're always going to come and attack, because it's Ajax. It's just what they've culturally do as a club.
Yeah, they lost all the away. Did they lose all the away games, or
no? They drew away at Bayern, but they lost to PSG and Roma.
Yeah, although they did win all the home games and lost to us, so maybe they're going to reverse that in the knockout stages. Dana's mentioned earlier, no Bjorn, she didn't make it through training today. But will you be expecting a few changes to the team, given that there is a cup final coming on Sunday?
Yeah, you know, like Sophie said, you know, manage minutes. It's harder, isn't it? Because the Perisic, who has been playing well, you know, had a nice little rest at the weekend. Lawrence came in, who's, as I said, started off a little bit out of position, but it's a pace and a danger with her, and she really sort of come into herself as the game, you know, went further into, you know, that final half an hour with the four subs, and you saw Lawrence popping up on in certain positions on on in that final third. Carter looks like a machine. Maybe you would probably expect her still to play. I don't know, Buchanan might. You know, who can come in? Would you take the risk and put Ingle in at the centre back? It's so hard to obviously, you know, it's a sentence I use regularly on here to second guess Emma. But it will be, I think it will be managed. It will have to be. Got no other choice.
Yeah, well, I do think for the cup final, we'll see probably the same 11 that beat Arsenal at Stamford Bridge. And based on that, Sophie, I've rested 1, 2, 3 players.
Who?
No, 4. Is that right? I can't even count my own team. 1, 2, 3. No, 3. It's 3. 3 starters from that. Lauren James, Neve Charles, and Leupolz, who all drop out of the team for me for this one. I'll tell you the 11 anyway, then you can pick it off as you want. It's Hampton in goal. Lawrence, Carter, Buchanan, and Perisic as a back four. Cuthbert and Ingle in midfield. And then Cameron, Chankovic, right, and then Ramirez as the attack. And that is because then you've got Beaver Jones, Macario, Leupolz to come on and give rest to Cuthbert, Cameron, and Wrighton. And then Nusken as well, you could use her to give Jess a few minutes off, given if half time is 0-0 or 1-0 to Chelsea, the game is dead and buried at that point, I think.
So if you're on mute.
It's gone off the mic.
Sorry, I'm on mute. I can see a reasoning. However, looking at the team she played on Sunday and the lack of change between Arsenal and Ajax, it wouldn't surprise me if she started the same team that started in Ajax. So that would be Hampton, Perisic, Carter, Buchanan, Charles, Cuthbert, Leupolz, James, Wrighton, Nusken and Kanarid. However, resting Charles, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, you could play Lawrence and Perisic as fullbacks, resting Charles. I can see that happening. She tried to do it at Everton, but obviously Bjorn got injured and it never happened. So yeah, that's a possibility. I think the other thing to bear in mind is after the cup final, we do go away for an international break and Emma doesn't seem to, she seems to think that doesn't count as minutes, if you know what I mean. So she tends to play strong lineups leading up to those international breaks. I think you have to start Cuthbert and Leupolz in midfield. You need to win that midfield battle early and then hopefully get a couple of goals and take them off towards sort of like the second half. Equally, I'm not sure Ramirez and or Macario have got a start in them at the moment. Maybe you start one and you bring the other one on at half time. Maybe you start Macario and bring Ramirez on for at half time or something. It's a possibility. But I still think she'll stick to the team that started against Ajax and Arsenal with maybe Lawrence in for Charles, as you said. Also, Perisic in for Charles, as you said, Dean.
Yeah, I mean, Rich, I'm not 100% sold on it. I think the only person I'm pretty sure is going to be on the bench and stay on the bench if not needed is Lauren James. I think that's going to be the one rest guaranteed. But what's your thoughts? And if you was Emma Hayes, what would you be doing for this match?
Mucevic is going in goal. That's the first point. I will pretty confidently say Mucevic will be playing in goal tomorrow. And as for the back four, I do agree that Neve does need to have some sort of rest, and you can play Lawrence at left back or even Perisic at left back. I mean, they can both play on each side. I think I would have Erin from the start and then hope that the game's sort of under control, sort of as I mentioned earlier, by sort of half time, either we've got like a 1-0 lead on the night or it's 0-0 and you can then potentially bring off at the start of the second half or like maybe a sort of an hour in. But I would probably play Ingle or start with Ingle next to Erin. I'd definitely be giving Fran the start here. You know, she's one who's been sort of regularly been given sort of 60 minutes. So she came on Sunday from the bench, but she can start for 60 minutes. And then I guess the difficult one for me is Well, I would potentially start Aggie again just to give her some experience from a start in the Champions League knockout round. I think she only started one game in the group stage, which would have been Paris FC away, I think. So I would start Aggie, and then it's the up front, which is the one that I'm trying to work out. And I think I would start with Lauren, and again, hope that, say, 50, 55 minutes in, you know, or even at half time, we're in a comfortable position where we can just take her off and, you know, rest her up for a start on Sunday. And then bring on, you know, we can bring on Macari and Ramirez in the second half for her and Fran. Yeah, I do think there's some aspect of Emma knowing what's coming ahead. And I think there has been cases of that earlier this month. I mean, this is game 7 in March. They've won the previous 6, and 5 of those 6 games have been away from home, and it has needed to be managed. We're obviously near the end of that now. We've got a home game and then a game on neutral field left to come before the international break. So, yeah, I do think there is definitely going to be an eye on Sunday. I don't care what she says. It's her last game against Arsenal. Do you really think she's going to... Do you really think she's not looking at that already?
Yeah. What a liar. No, that is why I exactly think that Lauren James is not going to play in this game. But Dane, what say you? You know, a big shout from Rich on Mrzovic in goal. I don't see it myself. And if I had money, I'd bet Rich on it, but I don't, so I'm not going to. But what would your thoughts be?
Yeah, I agree. I think Mrzovic in goal. I think there'll be also, echoing what Rich said, I think there'll be a large chunk of minutes for Sophie Ingle. I think Kirby's a good shout as well. That was my first thinking when you was talking to Sophie. And also thought Wright and Guru will come back in and have a good chunk of minutes. I would start, like Rich said, again, without nicking all his ideas, just to get the show finished. I would start with Cuthbert as well, and then look to bring her off for like a Nuskan. And Ingle can play the whole match based on how we're doing. That is the whole thing, isn't it? You know, if we're going to be playing Lauren, we're going to be playing Aaron, Neve, or whoever, Jess, you know, you're going to hope that we can try and get this game sort of like finished early on, and then make some substitutes. Again, seeing it's let's agree with Richard about everything. I think the fact that we could be playing Arsenal for the very last time, I can only imagine Emma's like really rubbing her hands at the thought of that. And there'll definitely be one eye on that. And, you know, we've got that amazing potential on the bench to come on, be it not fit, but still showing their potential with the minutes we're seeing at the moment. So, yeah, similar to you, I'd have Perisic at left back, or Lawrence at left back, wherever they decide. Even you even said maybe bring on Nuskan at centre back if we needed to, didn't you? And rest in either Carter or Buchanan. But we've obviously got to be in a decent position. You had Cankovic down a start, and I don't think so. I think that is a potential to come on to rest someone late in the game, but I disagree with that one.
I'll tell you what, if Nuskan starts in goal, I'll give you and Rich the show. There you go.
Okay.
Because you're both on Friday, so I'll just let you have it. There you go. That's your prize. I don't see it.
Right.
But there we go. We will see at about 7 p.m. tomorrow night. Hopefully you've listened to this before. Otherwise, it's all going to sound pretty stupid.
Should let it out early as a bonus.
Completely different. Well, it goes out at 6 o'clock in the morning. So
that's it. Okay.
Start to patch on you to listen to it tonight. Obviously, to flex, you already listened to it. No, Sophie doesn't do predictions, so I'm going to skip Sophie.
Same.
What's the score going to be?
What, me?
No, you're last. Always last.
I don't know. I kind of feel like maybe it'd just be sort of like a 2-0. I think there will come a point where they realise they just need to, or we should have been in a comfortable position where we can just kind of bleed the clock out with it. And I do think Ajax, they will have to come, as you sort of mentioned earlier, they are going to come forward anyway, because that's just the way they are. And yeah, you know, it should leave gaps for us. But yeah, I'd like to see sort of a controlled 1-0 or 2-0.
Yeah, I'm going to go 3-0, same score, early goal that sort of kills the game, but also Ajax just going to keep coming and trying to score, and we'll just pick them off with pace, especially Cambridge is going to be my pick for the player of the match already before we start, with that pace on the right-hand side. So Dan, I think you were going to go 2-0. What now?
I was going to say 2-0. I'm going to say 4-1.
4-1.
Yeah, I did think 4-2, but I was being a bit too generous to us being stuck within a game plan and the right thing to do, and maybe Ajax just getting a little bit excited than us showing our full potential. But no, I think 2 would be a bit too much. So I'll say 4-1.
Very sorry, but Buffer on Mixed has already put 4-1.
Did I? But I bet you did.
We'll have to change that.
No, I'm not changing it twice.
No, you got to, because Buffer's got it. It's the laws. We can't have the same scores.
This is out of order. What did you say?
I said 3-0.
Okay, 3-1 then.
3-1. There we go.
I said 3-1 for the first leg though. And you didn't, yeah. You say draw? Someone said
draw. So I don't think I would have said draw. I normally say things about 7-0.
1-0.
My mates will be well happy if it's 3-1 because that's their favourite score and that's the one.
Yeah, I love a 3-1. That's the one. If I've ever had a bet and I bet it, so I'll always get on 3-1. Win on.
I said 1-0 last time. Rich said 2-0 and you said 3-1.
Okay. So ourselves closest.
All wrong. Something common there. Yeah, we'll be back. So that's all we've got time for, sorry. So we're going to be back. That is all we've got time for because it is late. We'll be back on Friday. I can say the later time, but it's going to be the same time at 8:30 with myself, Dane, Rich, Jane, I think, will be back, and Matt Ball as well, looking back at the Ajax one. And of course, ahead to the Conti Cup final on Sunday. Dave, good to see you.
Yeah, you too. Is it going to be an early one? Because it's Good Friday on Sunday, or not? Is it still going to be an 8 o'clock?
Still 8:30. It's going to be even later.
Okay.
Don't blame me. I didn't ask for it.
Oh, who did? Oh, okay. Yeah, well, I suppose he does. He has added to the show, so I can't complain much.
He stole all his team. Sign-up ideas. I mean, at least let him start our phase.
Yeah. Well, no, he just agreed with what he said.
If he's not here, what would you say? You know?
I would have said exactly what he said. And it would have sounded like good because it was coming from me. Yeah, no, good. Nice to see Sophie and Rich again. And yeah, I look forward to coming in back on Friday and talking about how I got the 3-1 right.
Yeah, and how are you going to get tickets to the semi-final? For the Champions League match.
Yeah, I'll come sit with you.
Yeah, we'll get a Wentworth Kings Meadow seats in one stand.
Yeah.
But front row than Matthew Lower with Rich.
Oh, yeah, nice. He can buy the beers. He likes going walking off and buying the beers, doesn't he? So.
Well, you can't drink them at the stadium.
Can't do that at the bridge.
Oh, no, you can't. Yeah.
Need to have an amnesty for the semi final second leg. We get there. Nice to say that.
Yeah, Sophie, again, always great to see you and great insight into the game. Pleasure to have you on the show.
Thanks for having me on again. Great to communicate with everybody and see Rich and Dane again.
Yeah, and Rich, of course, we'll be back Friday, but always good to see you on the show. A little double act with Sophie at the minute, I think.
Yeah, but we'll have the double act with Dane when Musovic starts tomorrow. So
Yeah. You're not needed on Friday, Dane, if Musovic starts tomorrow.
Hopefully, it saves me writing out all these notes that.
No, you still have to write out the notes for us and the script, but yeah, we won't need you apart from that.
Yeah, apart from editing the show, put it out as well.
Oh, that as well.
Yeah. Talking of editing the show and putting it out, if you do like what we do and enjoy the show, please consider supporting us on Patreon. We don't just spend the money on ourselves. It does go back on the show because it costs money. For £5 a month, you do get early access to all the shows. You get ad-free listening. You also get exclusive interviews on there with Tony Farmer, Matt Beard, Liverpool coach, and Jordan Chaos, who was a Chelsea manager in the early 2000s as well. So all good content on there for you. And of course, whatever we do this summer will be exclusive to our Patreons as a thank you for helping us out. We maintain the show. As I said, we'll be back Friday. Until then, from Kings Meadow to Wembley, keep the blue flag flying high.
It's the 90th minute. All your mates around. You've got your McNuggets share boxes ready to go. Your mates already got booked for double dipping, and you steal the last nugget, snatching all 3 points. Perfect! Order McDelivery now on the McDonald's app. You in? At participating restaurants, 18 plus, serving times, delivery fee and terms apply. See mcdonalds.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.